Nope. Seen it. Oh, nah.
Can't find something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream. It's Sky without the dish. Watch unmissable Sky exclusives like The Regime and Netflix too, all over super reliable Sky full fibre broadband. Get Sky Stream, Sky Broadband and Netflix for just €50 a month. Search Sky Stream. Availability subject location. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Stream and broadband sold separately. Further terms apply. For more info, see sky.ie/speeds.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Ava Orsmond, chatting all things life lessons.
People often say to me when they come to my clinics, and now especially when they come to the hotel, they are like, you know, Ava, you are not the persona you the TV have, you know, made you to be. And actually, sometimes I'm thinking, my God, that's terribly sad that there is that negative. There's some people who absolutely don't like me because what they saw on television.
As ever, it's available on all podcast platforms.
If you like the Indo Daily, you can follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Grace Livingston's life was ended in the most unexpected circumstances.
In the late afternoon of December 7th, 1992, one of Grace Livingston's neighbours was in her kitchen browning meat for a casserole when she heard a loud noise. In another neighbour's house, a lady was putting away her Christmas shopping when she heard what she described as a booming noise that echoed through her house. But it wasn't until that evening, when Grace Livingston's husband James arrived home from work, that he found a darkened house and upstairs his wife's body on the bed, shot through the head, her hands, feet and mouth bound by black tape.
I'm Kevin Doyle, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Sarah Cadden, Sunday Independent columnist, to examine the brutal murder of Grace Livingston and the mystery that remains unsolved to this day. Sarah, can you start by telling me about the victim in this story?
Grace Livingston was a 57-year-old woman who lived in Malahide in North County, Dublin. And on the 7th of December 1992, she was murdered in her home in the middle of what seemed a perfectly ordinary day in a perfectly ordinary house in a very nice, comfortable area in Dublin.
At the time, she would have been called, we kind of think of it as a derogatory term now, but a housewife.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you read kind of reports of the Livingstons' household at that time, and it was very much she enjoyed arranging flowers, doing the garden. Her husband was worked for revenue. He was involved with the FCA. He liked fishing. You know, there was a kind of a story about how he'd bring home the worms that he used for bait so that she could put them into the garden, you know, to help, you know,
The soil,
yeah. And, you know, it just also, you know, nearly a little bit 1950s, even from today's perspective. It was a sort of, now their domestic life has been described as idyllic and blissful, but obviously this was completely destroyed that day in early December.
Yeah, and they lived on a relatively quiet road in Malahide. I know now Malahide is kind of a bustling centre, but it was only 1992. You say it does sound like it was a lot longer before that in some ways, but it was a quiet area that they lived. Everybody knew everybody.
I think people in Malahide would probably say that that's still the case. A lot of people who lived there would still refer to the village in the same way that other kind of little coastal enclaves around Dublin would, like, you know, Dalkey or Sandymount or Howth. The village remains very much the heart of Malahide, and it's the kind of place where people who grow up in Malahide either stay there or always feel drawn back to it.
You mentioned her husband James then. He becomes a very big part of the story, but he was from Monaghan originally. And he was very high up in the Revenue Commissioners.
He was, and he had set up the Special Investigations Unit in Revenue, which he ran. And it at the time, one of the big issues that he brought up around his wife's death was that he would have been looking into people who were smuggling fuel across the border, illegal offshore or not. Offshore accounts, and he would have felt that he was working with some fairly shady dealings, let's say.
He wasn't a friend of the criminals, shall we say. The IRA, in fact, were a big part of his target. The people who he was targeting were many members of the IRA.
Yes, and one of his points that he made after his wife's murder was that he apparently went to the guards with a list of people whom he thought could have been and were, you know, potentially capable of being involved in her death.
So, the murder then, by all accounts, it was, and this is such a stereotype, but it was a perfectly normal day in a perfectly normal village in Dublin.
Yeah, and again, it's that kind of nearly that 1950s things, nearly like the Truman Show. You know, he left for work on the button. He carpooled with one of his colleagues who lived, you know, a matter of minutes away, collected him. They drove to work together. He spent the day at work. He went for a swim with some colleagues in the afternoon and then came home at the same time as he did every day, dropping his colleague again home to his house before he came to his own home.
And what did Grace do?
Grace that day had gone to the supermarket. She had talked on her doorstep with one of her very close neighbours. And then from appearances of the house, she'd gone about her day. They had been due to go to his native Monaghan that evening for an anniversary mass for his late brother. And so when James Livingston arrived home, he was expecting that they were having their dinner slightly earlier than usual in order to head off.
That's not what happened, though. So the story goes that he went for a swim at lunchtime. But other than that, he had been in work all day. He drove his colleague from the Revenue Commissioner, Art O'Connor, home at 5 o'clock, and he landed home himself around 10 to 6. What happened then?
It was early December. The house was pitch dark by 10 to 6. He couldn't find his wife downstairs in the house. He went upstairs and she was dead, face down on their bed. She had black tape around her head and mouth, and she'd been shot.
A pretty gruesome killing.
Very much so. I mean, very, very shocking. There's tiny domestic detail reported at the time of dustpan and brush and a pile of kind of floor sweepings in the kitchen. It was a real juxtaposition of the very ordinary with really extraordinary violence.
And so what does James Livingston do on finding the body?
He ran to get help, and I think he was unsuccessful at one door and arrived at another neighbour's house. She was a nurse. She came to help him, and other neighbours were kind of summoned and came to the house also.
And so there was a call logged with the emergency services at 5:58 p.m. So we're told he got home around 10 to 6. So pretty much we're a few minutes and the call is going in to 999. But there's an important detail in this, which is that that nurse you mentioned and a local doctor, they pronounced Grace dead at the scene at 6:35. And they told Gardaí that they believed she had been dead for some time.
Yes, the doctor, who was Dr. Moodley, he estimated that she had been dead from about between 4:30 and 5 o'clock that evening, which proved very significant as this case progressed.
And so that then begs the question, having gone to mass, having done her shopping, having chatted with neighbours around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, who killed Grace Livingston?
That remains unanswered to this day. Immediately, as is often the case, her husband was the prime suspect in this. The gun that she was killed with was his gun. It was found in a hedge outside in the garden. There were 8 firearms in the house. It was subsequently found that not all of them were licensed. And, you know, what James Livingston would have held in later years was that it was decided that it was him. And then the case was being built around that decision.
Now, something we always hear in the media reports after a murder like this is Gardaí are carrying out door-to-door inquiries. That's exactly what they did here. And the various stories they got from neighbours show why those type of inquiries are always done in cases like this. What were they told?
There were 3 separate instances of people hearing, well, again, women much like Grace Livingston who were in their houses in the late afternoon, and they reported hearing loud bangs at around the 4:30 mark. One woman said that she knew it was around 4:30 she was going to watch Emmerdale Farm. Another woman said that she knew that it was 4:30 because she was making a stew, and she looked at the clock for timings. And another neighbour reported hearing bangs too.
And so that does fit with the timeline that the doctor had put on possible death.
Yes, it does. And in 2008, quite some time after all this, there was an inquiry into the investigation in the High Court. And it was heard then that the Gardaí had suggested that the noises may have come from the sea or nearby building works, and really weren't factored in, again, holding up James Livingstone's argument that everything was trying to be made to fit that he did it.
Because the Garda forensics, and this is important, suggested that actually her time of death was much closer to the time of her body being discovered, that it was sometime perhaps around 6 o'clock.
Well, Dr. John Harbison, who was the state pathologist at the time, estimated her death to be close to 6 o'clock. Later, when a detective superintendent was asked to review the investigation, he spoke to Dr. Harbison, who said he couldn't argue with Dr. Moodley's opinion that it had been close to 4:30.
And so the day of the funeral, there is no doubt really in the minds of Gardaí. We know in hindsight that James Livingstone was pretty much their chief suspect, maybe not their only suspect, but the one that they were putting most energy into trying to find out more about his movements. And even on the day of the funeral, they approached the family looking for blood samples.
Yes, and James Livingstone has said he was shown photographs of his wife's dead body, his children, who were a daughter of 22 and a son of 20 who lived with them in the house in Malahide. They were both told terrible things about their father, his reputation at work. The Livingstones claimed that there was a great campaign of, you could call it, intimidating behaviour around that time.
And so, Sarah, talk me through the evidence. What did Gardaí actually have to work off? Because it was a crime scene. They had a crime scene. They have sort of witnesses in terms of the neighbours. They don't have any motive. And that seemed to be the key thing that was lacking. Talk me through what evidence they did have.
The one thing they did have was a fingerprint on the tape that was around Grace Livingstone's mouth and head. And that was a fingerprint that they've never found a match for. It did not match James Livingstone. It was his gun, but there was no residue on his clothes or on his hands of having shot a gun. The neighbours have said that there was no smell of cordite in the room that would indicate that a gun had been shot in that room recently. So the evidence, you know, the biggest evidence even to now is what the neighbours heard and what the neighbours saw. It's a small cul-de-sac of not very many houses. Everybody would have known each other, probably known each other's movements quite well. And so there were the neighbours who heard the bangs. There was a gardener across the road who was topping trees who saw, a man in the porch of the Livingstones' house after 4:30. And it was suggested that maybe he was mistaken. This was a woman and that it was Grace Livingstone herself. Another neighbour, two teenage girls coming home from school, saw a young man in a beige or fawn coat on the cul-de-sac, and one said that he either went into the Livingston's house or one either side of it.
But yet those lines of inquiry never really got anywhere. I think one of the most, in the era of Google Maps that we now live in, one of the strangest things was the Gardaí's attempts to disprove James Livingston's alibi, which was that he didn't get home until 10 to 6 in the evening.
And Art O'Connor obviously was crucial to that.
His work colleague.
Yes, was crucial because he had dropped him off at home. And it's no distance, as you say, in the era of Google Maps, from one house to the other. And Art O'Connor has said himself that he felt that what he was saying happened didn't suit what they wanted to hear.
So Gardaí actually ran tests whereby they would leave the revenue offices at a certain time to prove how quickly you could get back to the Livingstones' house. And on one occasion, they managed to get there by 5:36 p.m. but it doesn't really tally with the real life experience and the fact that there was a second man on this journey with James Livingston.
You're probably talking ideal conditions as well, every light green for you. And again, you have to say that was the ideal time of arrival if you, you know, really went all out to get there that quickly. Mm.
You mentioned that James Livingston had his own theories about what might have happened.
He did, and he believed that someone that he was investigating wished him harm. The guards would have said at the time, why then would they kill his wife? Why not just kill him? And, you know, that's a reasonable question. But James Livingston had a list of people that he thought capable of doing this crime.
And so the guard investigation completed by August 1993. And yet nobody was charged. So what did the Gardaí at the time conclude?
They concluded it could not be proved. There was no evidence that it was James Livingston. It remained open. He had been arrested in March 1993. And that was the basis of the High Court case in 2008, which was on the grounds of unlawful arrest of James Livingston and slander. And the guards settled that case after 5 days.
The cold case review then that took place years later, as you say, new witnesses came forward. But I find the fascinating story of the hitchhiker. Can you tell me about that one?
So there were a number, as we've already mentioned, there was the young man in the beige coat who apparently had collar length hair, and he, everyone had said that about his hair being slightly longer, and a young man. And a hitchhiker that matched this had been seen, behaviour seemed agitated. The person who picked him up said that he had become more agitated when the report came on the news, on the radio in the car about the killing. That man was later located and cleared.
Cold case detectives actually tracked him down to the UK.
But the
fingerprint didn't match again.
There were several young men who seemed that they might fit the bill, and they were all located, and no one has matched that fingerprint.
And so it remains an unsolved case. Today, all these years later, from 1992, we still don't know who killed. I take you back to the question I asked you at the start, Sarah, who killed, what happened to Grace Livingston? We don't know.
Well, I think what was said in the High Court inquiry into the case was that James Livingston had been entitled to a presumption of innocence. And part of the grievance and the grief that family felt over the investigation into her death was that they felt he had not been presumed innocent. And while his children said in 2008 that they felt a degree of relief that the ordeal was over, he said, but we still don't know who killed Grace and we really should find out, but no one has.
My thanks to Sarah Cadden for joining me today. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced and researched by Tabitha Monaghan, sound by Gavin Hennessy. Archive clips were from RTE and independent.ie. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow, and leave us a review.